Hello, and welcome to the Hearth and Hedge podcast. My name is Amberly, and I'm so pleased to have you join me today. Today's guest has written countless books on modern witchcraft and paganism, as well as fiction. When not writing, she reads tarot and does energy healing. She lives in a 140-year-old farmhouse in rural upstate New York with five cats who supervise all of her activities, both magical and mundane. She is also a repeat guest on The Hearth and Hedge. Please welcome the lovely Deborah Blake.
Thank you so much.
I'm so glad to have you back. I really enjoyed our last interview. I think we're going to have fun today.
We definitely have fun.
Yes. So are you drinking anything exciting today?
Water.
That's exciting.
Well, it's warm water, actually, because it's really cold here and I didn't feel like tea. So it's, I don't know, I guess it's exciting that it's warm. It's, hey, I am drinking it out of a handcrafted pottery mug made by a friend. So that's what makes it exciting.
That's right. And it's a beautiful mug. And didn't I say as soon as we start recording, my dog's going to say I need to go outside?
Of course.
Yeah, well, she's going to have to wait.
I don't know where she just went, but she started growling at me, so. Just going to have to wait. Or I'm going to have to clean up a puddle. Probably the second thing.
Or you could pause it and you could go let her out. It's fine.
I could. I don't know where she went, though. If she comes back, we'll do that.
All right.
My dogs are special.
I understand.
Are you reading anything?
I have many special cats. Right. Some of them are more special than others, for sure.
Yeah, I understand that.
Like special challenge cats, yes.
I have one of those, yeah. Okay, Roxanne. All right, I'll be right back. I'm so sorry.
That's all right. I'll find a pen and write down Google search thing.
I told you you needed the last setting when I told you. I'm a chicken. Do you want? Is that where it fell? Then you go like, yeah. We're not doing this. Down. Stay. Nice. Yeah. Roxanne, I don't want to love on you right now, Stevie.
So, was he just taking you out?
What do you want?
I don't understand you. Well, you're paying attention to something other than the dog. That's usually our issue is, you know, I ignored you all day long, but now you're doing something that doesn't include me, and therefore I am going to be a giant pain in the ass.
Yeah, now I have to. I guess we're going to do this now.
Yes, I am familiar, and I have none, you know, because, yeah, there are two on the bed, two on the couch. I don't know where the other one is.
You guys are naughty, naughty loss.
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, maybe if I just put my chair back to them, though,
it'd be awful.
Yeah. It's nice to live in a dream world.
I know. They do this every time I record. They're, like, so quiet. They lay there, like, completely dead to the world, and as soon as I start to record, they either need to go outside or it's playtime.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I've been in the middle of podcasts and had cats try and run across the keyboard. If I'm doing something with my phone and the phone is on a stand, Diana, my problem child, will walk behind it and like do this on the stand so the phone falls over. Yeah, no, I feel your pain. That's all I'm saying.
It's fun. It's fun, you know, and this is life.
Yep.
It's the way it is. So when you have animals, you have toddlers.
Well, that's it. I mean, we could be those kind of crazy people who don't have animals. You don't have these issues, but what would be the point of that?
I know. That would be really boring.
Yeah.
And lonely.
It'd be very lonely. Yeah. I could not live in an old house by myself with no cats.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
They drummed me out of the crazy cat lady union. I got down to one at one point, and I was like, that's it. The union's calling any day now. I must run out and buy, you know, get three more cats. And I did.
That's funny. So are you reading anything right now that's exciting to you?
Oh, you mean something that I didn't write?
Yes.
Let's see. What novels am I reading? I'm reading This year's lead is Susan Mallory, which I, of course, don't remember the title of. So that's a contemporary romance, women's fiction kind of thing. And as far as nonfiction books, I've got a couple of cool ones stacked up that I got recently, which, you know, of course, the stack is over there, and I don't remember the names.
That's okay.
Just a second. I'll find one. Yeah, I mean, I have so many books. So many books! Okay. So, this was basically, you know, research, but it's cool. Magic of the Gods and Goddesses, How to Invoke Their Powers by D.J. Conway.
Oh, I love D.J. Conway.
Yeah, there, and it is a big, thick, big, thick book. But, you know, your guide to the ancient paths of spirituality. And you'd think I'd know all that stuff, but, you know, I've been working on a new year in a day book, because I did one, oh, good Lord, 2017, something like that. And 2019, and people have been saying, well, it's great, but I've been using it every year for, you know, a bunch of years. Could you write another one? So I wrote another one, because I always do what people tell me to do. I'm very good that way. And I was just doing major revisions on that, because when I handed it in last, I guess I'm going to say last fall, I had had COVID again in April, and I had COVID brain so bad that I basically handed in, well, it wasn't good. You're like, we're just gonna say it was a hot mess. And I, you know, I knew I was struggling at the point where I was writing it. I knew it was really, that I was having a really hard time. And, you know, when my editor and the rest of the Llewellyn gang finally got around to looking at it a couple of months ago at what they call a vision meeting, which is where they start figuring out the final plan for the book, and they're like, well, crap, the final plan for this book is send it back to Deborah and make her make it okay. So yeah, I had to like throw out a bunch of things, put new things in. They were not wrong, by the way. They were completely and totally right. It was a hot mess. Because my brain wasn't working right. I mean, it's not 100% now, but it's enough better that I was able to look at it and go, oh, that's not good. So, and that, you know, that's one of the things about being a professional as an author, is if you send them something that is not right and they send it back to you and go, hey, this is not right, you say, okay, and then you fix it. You don't argue with them, you know, especially if they're right, which in this case, they really, really were. But either way, that's your job, is to make the book the thing the publisher wants. And I honestly would have been appalled if we had sent out the book that I had sent to them.
Right.
For one thing, there was a whole bunch of stuff that was pretty much the same stuff as was in the first book, which the whole point was writing a new book.
Right.
So, yeah, like, I don't know. But, and there were duplicates of things. I mean, it's 366 days. It's, yeah, it's all better now. But yes, that's what I had this book, because I was looking up like new gods and goddesses that I hadn't used in the last one, which, you know, that kind of thing. But it's going to be fun when it comes out, because there's going to be recipes in there, you know, simple ones, because it's a short book. But yeah, all sorts of fun activities. It's going to be more suggestions for action, you know, like one little thing you could do every day, as opposed to here's an interesting fact about this day kind of thing. So it's going to be more like, well, here's an interesting fact, but now take that, run with it, and go do something fun.
Yeah, awesome. It's great. Lay down.
She's like,
okay, no, if you insist. I mean, I will. Don't think I won't. If somebody tells me to lay down, I'm like, okay.
All right. Follow me, spouse. Do spouse. So you have two books that just came out in March.
I do. Yes. One from each of two different publishers. It's not like Llewellyn said, let's put out two of Deborah's books in the same week, because that would just be cray cray, even for that. Yeah. No, I have Witchcraft on a Shoestring, which is actually a re-release from, it was one of my earlier Llewellyn books. It went out of print, which happens sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it got picked up by Crossed Crow Books, who is doing that with a lot of what I'd call classic authors, you know, people who are, you know, have, you know, sort of back stock of books that are really, really good books and for whatever reason just went out of print. And so they're putting them back out in the world along with new books. So they're doing all sorts of things. They're great people to work with. So yeah, that came out on the 5th. And then my new book from Llewellyn, which is The Eclectic Witch's Book of Shadows Companion, came out on the 8th. That is a follow-up to, obviously, The Eclectic Witch's Book of Shadows, which came out a few years ago. And that one was sort of funny because it was my first hardcover. The book is so gorgeous. It has illustrations by Nikki Mueller on, right behind me.
Beautiful.
And you know, we on purpose, you know, I wanted this to be an active Book of Shadows. I mean, I start people off with basic information and make it useful and easy, but then I wanted them to be able to add their own things. Illustrations. So there's, you know, places you can write in the book. And so, you know, if you go to the herb section and then you use some herbs that aren't in the book, you could write it down and make it your own. The only problem with that, it turned out, was that the book was so beautiful, nobody wanted to write in it. And especially, I think, because it was a hardcover, and, you know, hardcovers seem sort of, I don't know, sacred somehow.
Yeah.
And which I get that. I mean, I had people tell me they bought two, one to keep pristine and one to write in, which I'm like, well, I think everybody should do that. Yeah.
You're like, thanks.
Everybody like, that's
what a great idea.
But then I had a lot of people who said, oh, I love this, but I really, really don't want to write in it. So I talked to Llewellyn and I said, look, can we put out a companion book? Can we put out something that's a paperback and, you know, would go with it and has more information and more fun stuff, but that people would be more comfortable writing in. So we came out with the companion, which I had actually, when I designed the book, had asked them to put in a few coloring pages because I thought that would be fun. Mm-hmm. It would get people started. And they made the whole book colorable. So like, instead of having solid pictures, everything, like, it's so cool. I'll tell you what, I opened my box of author copies when they first arrived, which is, for an author, this is one of your big days. You know, the box of books comes usually a couple of weeks before it's available to the public, depends on when it gets to the warehouse from the printer. And you open it up, and this is going to be the first time you've actually held it in your hands. And you don't necessarily know exactly what it's going to look like. I mean, you know, we get sent what's called proof edits, which is, you know, the final thing in like a PDF, but you can't always tell from that what the real book will look like. And I opened this up and I was leafing through it and I was just like, oh my God, it's so cool. Yeah, there was a lot of jumping up and down and yelling and scared cats. And awesome. I probably was doing a book opening video, you know, a box opening video. So I probably scared all my readers too. They're like, why is she shrinking?
That's funny. Well, I'm going to have to contact Marcus and tell him that I'm disappointed that he didn't send me that.
Exactly. Well, and while you're at it, remind him that since the new Oracle deck is coming out, Everyday Witches Familiars Oracle is coming in May, and you probably should get a copy of that too while you're asking for crap, you know?
Absolutely. Like, I agree.
Make me a box with all the Deborah Blake things for this year, which is a pretty big box.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm excited. I will. I'll contact them and let them know you need to do that. Usually they just send me stuff.
Well, Marcus, if you're listening to this, get on the stick, dude.
You hear that, Marcus?
That's funny.
Well, do you have anything, like any events that you're planning on doing?
I actually don't. I usually do one or two conventions or conferences a year. And of course, you know, some of them are fiction and some of them are nonfiction because mm-hmm. of, you know, I wear two hats. And of course, I didn't go anywhere for 3 years because of COVID. Mm-hmm. And not this fall, but the fall, you know, the fall before this, I finally went out to like a couple, one, which was BoucherCon, which is a mystery convention, and then celebrating Samhain, which is in New Hampshire, which is a fabulous mm. pagan convention. And I went to that, had a blast, and then went to another fiction one the, you know, last February, where I came home with the flu, despite the fact that it was a masks required thing, because we all went out to eat and you mm-hmm. don't know, you know, if somebody's in the kitchen sniffling into your food. Yeah. I mean, I was super careful. I masked on the plane. I masked at the convention. And I still came home sick. At least I didn't come home with sick with COVID. That I got all by myself without a convention a month later. But again, what I realized was that I'm really still not comfortable with large groups of people. Mm-hmm. I have some health issues, and I'm in the more vulnerable category. Mm-hmm. Plus, oldish. You know, hey, I'm turning 64 at the end of April, so I don't know how that happened. But you know, I do have to be more careful than your average person, and I've had COVID twice. I've gotten long COVID both times. So I'm a little on the paranoid side. So, you know, what I'm doing at this point is last fall I gave an online tarot class, and I may do a couple more online classes. I haven't been doing the convention thing. I'm not sure about next year. I'm very tempted by Paganicon in Minnesota, because it's right near where Llewellyn is.
That's right.
My publisher. So, and then I would get to see Alicia, my editor, and Marcus, and a bunch of other people. Mm-hmm. But it's in March in Minnesota. Who thought that was a good idea?
I mean, Minnesotans.
You know, I mean, at least when I would go to PantheaCon, which was in San Jose in February, yes, mm-hmm. I did have to fly across the country, which was always a major crapshoot in February, mm-hmm. flying out of Albany through Chicago, usually, both of which are like hubs of bad weather. Mm-hmm. But then at least when I got to the other side of the country, it was warm and I had a break from upstate New York weather. Going from upstate New York to Minnesota, I'm not sure that's an improvement. So, you know, we'll see about that one. I am hoping that by next year I will feel a little bit more comfortable, and I don't know, maybe things will be better. She said, yeah. Not really believing it, but you know, I live in hope. But I'm not going anywhere.
Well, I know a lot of my authors that I talk to, my authors are mine.
Now, of course they are.
One of the authors that I talked to.
I used to, when I ran the Artisans Guild, I used to talk about my artists. And I had one of them get very offended. And she was like, I am not your artist. I'm like, well, you kind of are. Do I cut the checks that have your name on them? Yes, I do. You are my artist. Do you want me to take the check back?
That's funny. But yeah, a lot of the artists that I work with or that I interview are still very home-based. They don't want to go out and be around people, which is the beauty of being an author.
Right.
Because you're writing and you can write from anywhere you want to. So.
Well, that's the theory, you know, until your cat walks across your laptop. But, it is interesting for people who are not authors, which is most people, I guess. I mean, they don't necessarily understand what an author's life is like. I didn't mm-hmm. realize until I started doing it. I thought you got to sit in a corner with your cats and write books. Yay.
Right.
Turns out you actually have to promote those books. So it is mm-hmm. kind of good to occasionally leave your house. You know, where I live, there are not a lot of like local bookstores. I mean, we do have one indie bookstore, but yeah, it's not pagan oriented to say the least. I mean, they're not anti-pagan, but
right.
You know, and you know, we do have a, you know, a pagan shop, you know, about a half an hour from my house. It's basically a crystal shop that also has, you know, books and decks, and they carry my stuff and they love to have, you know, autographed copies on hand and things. But they don't do big events, you know, right. So it is, you know, it is nice to occasionally get out and meet people in person. I do miss mm-hmm. that. You know, there is very little as rewarding as having somebody come up to you and say, oh, my God, I love your books.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, the checks are nice, too. But, yeah, because somebody has to buy cat food. I'm just saying.
That's right.
But, yeah, I mean, I actually miss the energy of those kind of things, because it does sort of help refill the well and remind you why you're writing these books. Mm-hmm. I mean, I get a lot of that online. I do get, you know, emails and messages, and I answer every one. Because if somebody takes the trouble to tell me they like my book, I'm going to take 5 minutes to go, thank you very much.
That's great.
But yeah, first of all, traveling has just gotten so much worse. I mean, the airplane thing, you know, it's just not, it was never, I thought, pleasant. I never really liked traveling, but now it's really unpleasant and completely out of your control, and stuff goes wrong 9 times out of 10. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's nothing really close to me, unfortunately. That is, you know, one of the problems of living in the middle of nowhere. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
If I want to go to some place, you know, like this one in New Hampshire is probably the closest one. And, you mm-hmm. know, even that was 4 or 5 hours of driving.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't drive. My friend Rebecca Elson from the Magical Buffet drove, because I don't do long drives either. I have wuss.
So tell me a little bit about that one. That's on my bucket list. It's on my list of conferences to get to.
Well, first of all, I hope that they will continue having it, because the gentleman who ran it for many years died suddenly last year, like a month before the conference, and they already had everything set up and people stepped up and, you know, the conference went on. I have not heard whether or not they are going to continue doing it. It's just a one day. It's a Sunday by Halloween, Samhain, celebrate Samhain, that's sort of a giveaway. Mm-hmm. But it was a really nice little conference. It, you know, it had, you know, a few authors that I knew. It had, you know, a few people selling cool things. It had like some performances, and, you know, the authors would chat with people, you know, there would be little talks and things. Very low key, very mellow, which is, you know, a thing I like. You know, held mm-hmm. in the hotel where you're doing, which is always really nice, because you don't have to go anywhere.
Right. Yeah.
And also, fun fact, New Hampshire doesn't have sales tax on alcohol. So when you're there, you go to the liquor store and you stock up. There's your public service announcement for the day.
Interesting.
So yeah, I have not heard if they're going to keep doing it. I hope they do. It really is a very nice little laid back, you know, kind of pagan thing. So
nice.
There's, you know, there aren't a lot of conferences to go to these days. But,
right.
I mean, there are some, but like Pantheacon, which was my main one, I didn't go every year because it was across the country, but I went probably every other year, every third year for 10, 12 years. And mm-hmm. I missed that one. I really loved that conference. So, yeah, I mean, there's Paganicon, there's, you know, Selena Fox's group does some things,
mm-hmm.
But talk about being in the middle of nowhere. They right. really are in the middle. I mean, they invited me one year to come be like the top whatever, which would have been great. I couldn't figure out how to get there. You know, there was like, by the time I drove the hour and a half to the airport near me, flew to the airport that was close to them, which was like another hour and a half away from where they were, trying to figure out how to get from point A to point B, I was too tired to go. I mean, I would like to, I think they've moved it to a slightly better location, and I would like to go to one of those eventually. And I love Selena. Selena's wonderful. You know, her whole gang is great. She was somebody that I used to see every time I went to Pantheon. But, and I think, yeah, Christopher Penzack's people, maybe they may do something.
And there's the Sacred Space Conference in Baltimore, which is coming up at the end of this month.
Well, they've never invited me to do that.
Well, I will talk to them because I'm going.
All right, then, because Baltimore might be doable. Baltimore's only one flight instead of two.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
So, yeah, almost every place I go, you have to change flights, and it's just,
Yeah, even though I live in the D.C. area and I fly out of D.C., pretty much anywhere I go, I have to change flights, which seems like there should be a direct flight.
Well, like, you think from Albany, which is a fair, I mean, it is an international airport. It's a tiny international airport, but still, you know, but no, if you want a direct flight, you have to go to New York City, and then you've already gone to New York City. So,
right. Yeah.
And they also, you know, there used to be more direct flights. They don't have as many as they used to because they're aligned.
Yeah. I'm going to Tennessee in June this year for a special girlfriend trip with my best friend. We're flying down to see Alanis Morissette. So excited. And I splurged and I'm flying first class for the first time in my life. So I'm excited about that.
That's cool. Yeah. I always fly Southwest. There is no first class. You just can't get on the plane a little earlier.
That's usually the way it is for me.
Basically it. But yeah, I'm actually flying out to San Diego in the middle of May because my father is celebrating his 90th birthday. And
that's
somehow
amazing.
He felt like that was a good reason to throw a party.
Well, I mean, why?
Yeah. And I'm like, good, I get to see the ocean and you, Dad. But yeah, I'm actually, even before COVID happened, I was trying to get out there once a year because my parents are not young anymore.
Right.
And when I went out to Pantheon, I'd visit them for a couple of days in San Diego, fly to San Jose, where my stepdaughter lives, and see her and go to the con. Now she has to come to San Diego. What, her fiance's parents live there, so it works out really well. But yeah, so I will be going through, I think, Baltimore on one leg and Chicago on another leg, and just praying I don't end up 5 hours late like I was a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were 3 years where I didn't get out there at all. So, and that was horrible. So,
we're going. My parents lived in upstate California, Northern California for a long time. And I only got out to see them once, which was, I mean, in 8 years that they lived there. Then they moved to Arkansas. Now they just bought a house in New Mexico. So,
well, they get around.
They do. They do. Yeah.
Well, see, my parents went out to San Diego to, you know, escape upstate New York.
Right.
And what they did for many, many years was they took an RV back and forth between the two and would go to like all the national parks and things. Now they take cruises. So, yeah.
Well, cruises probably are more comfortable.
Well, you know, less work for you.
Less
for
work,
sure.
Exactly.
Although, again, post-COVID, the idea of a cruise and being trapped with a, no, thank you. And in fact, the first one they took, my dad got COVID, so.
Oh, no. Yeah, I've always wanted to do a river cruise in Europe.
Me too, though. If I were going to do a cruise, that's what I would want to do.
Yeah, I want to do the Christmas markets in Germany. Down the Rhine River.
Man, that would be
so
cool.
Amazing. Yeah. But it's so expensive.
Yeah.
It's like,
on the other hand, you can see the shore from the boat.
Well, that's
so
true.
You know, if you get stalled out, it's not like you're going to get stuck in the middle of the ocean.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm
not an adventurous traveler. I do all my adventures in books. You know, my fiction books, people do fun and interesting things or discover dead bodies or, you know, depending on what kind of book it is. Although I suppose discovering a dead body could be fun and interesting if that floats your boat.
I mean, it might be.
Yeah. I haven't as yet done it in real life, so I'll let you know if and when it happens.
Okay, that's fair.
I mean, actually, that's a lie. I have discovered dead bodies. They're mice. You know, I have five cats and I live in an old farmhouse. I see dead bodies all the time, but they're not that exciting, really.
Right. They're just gross.
No, they're just like, oh, look, well, at least it's dead and not, you know, eating food in my pantry.
Right, exactly. That's a good thing about
the
cats.
I always apologize to the mouse. I'm like, I'm very sorry, mouse, but did you not get the five cats live here memo?
Because,
you know, I have a barn. Stay in the barn. You are perfectly safe.
Yep. Yep. So are your cats indoor cats?
Yes, they are. Where I when I was younger, I had indoor-outdoor cats, which I would not do anymore. But when I moved out to this house 21, 22 years ago, there are coyotes, foxes, eagles, hawks. And people drive very, very fast down what should be a slow country road. So, and now I have a bear. So I'm very, very glad.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that my, I, in fact, I had a bear completely mangle my bird feeder like a week and a half ago. And then I like, there were two of them and he only mangled the one that had the suet on it. So I waited a few days. He didn't touch the other one. I put more bird seed out. Week and a half. It was fine. Got up this morning. Nope. I have two more ex bird feeders. So I, as much as I love to feed the birds, the bear wins. And I guess I'm done for the year. What I'll probably do is go out first thing in the morning and scatter a little seed on the ground. And, you know, they'll eat that by the end of the day, it'll be gone. But I really don't wish to, like, tempt the bear to come back to my house.
That's fair.
So, I guess my bird watching days are over for the season, which is too bad because this is the best time of year. I mean, especially
if
you're like a nature loving pagan and you're like, ooh, I get to watch the birds and connect with nature and see all the ones that are coming back for the spring. And unless you have a bear from down the street that wanders up and finds your bird feeders. So
jerky bears. Well, you could do it. You could have a bird bath out there.
They probably just come for a drink. I don't know. Yeah, my construction guys are like, you should get a camera. And I'm like, right. And just put up a new bird feeder every day and then get a camera to like take pictures of the bear destroying the new bird feeder. I do have a couple old ones I don't care about. That might work. But it actually bent. I have like shepherd's hooks, the big metal things that go in the ground that you hang the bird feeders off. They're bent like pretzels. I don't even have anything to put the bird feeders on anymore. The bear obviously just went whack. I don't know. I do protection work around my house every year and around the outside and everything. And apparently I should include like bear protection. It never occurred to me. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, we just had about 30 cedar waxwings come through on their.
Oh, cool. I haven't seen one of those in years. They don't seem to come to this area. Where I was growing up, further upstate New York, I would see them when I was a kid. But yeah, I have red-winged blackbirds and grackles.
Oh, I love them.
Cardinals all winter long, which just make my heart happy. Luckily, the bear was asleep for that part, so I still got my cardinals. We should probably talk about these silly books. I don't know.
Yes. Let's talk about these books. So I know that Witchcraft on a Shoestring, this is a reprint, but this is like a majorly important thing, especially now that we have like
Everything crazy you said in Friends of.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's insane.
It's actually, I mean, I think it's a book whose time has come back around. I think it was very good timing. And of course, you know, there are a bunch of people who never saw it the first time, aren't even aware that it was out, you know, a number of years ago. And they're like, thank goodness you put this out. This is, you know, really good time. And I'm like, well, it was out all along. But it does have a very pretty cover now. I love the new cover. The new cover.
It does. It's really cute.
It's really snazzy. And yeah, it's got inexpensive ways to do, you know, witchy crafts or, you know, feed people on a budget. You know, if you're having a group of people over and you don't want to spend, you know, $100, I have recipes that you can make for a bunch of people that don't cost a ton of money. It was really funny. When I first wrote this book, you know, I have my coven, Blue Moon Circle. We're actually celebrating our 20-year anniversary together, if you can believe that.
Wow.
I know. That hardly ever happens. And we've had some people who've come and gone, but the core, like, three, four people have been here for the whole 20 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But when I started talking about writing this book, we all sort of laughed because that's just how we do our witchcraft. We're all cheap. You know, especially back then, we really didn't, any of us, have any spare money. People were raising children, you know, with, you know, that kind of stuff. But we're also sort of crafty do-it-yourselfer kind of witches. So, yeah, we wouldn't necessarily buy a fancy athame. We'd buy a plain athame and then decorate it so that it had our own personality. And there were, we like to do witch crafts because then you're putting your energy into the things when you're making them. So for me, this was sort of a, well, I'm just going to write down all the stuff we do anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it was, you know, one of those things where I was like, yeah, that's just what we do. I mean, these days, I will confess to occasionally buying a really large crystal I don't need. you know, that's not fair. Not a lot of them because I've run out of room because of all the other crystals. I have two like problem areas. One is the stones. I am a crystal junkie, and the other is books, because, you know, I became an author because I love to read books. I have a lot of books, pagan and otherwise. But yeah, a lot of the other things that I have are, you know, I don't make my own candles anymore because it's just messy, you know, but you can, and it's fun, but we will like take, you know, a candle and put oils on it and we'll decorate it with things. We'll etch stuff into it. So I like the idea of not spending a ton of money on your craft, because we all have things we, I have cats with expensive vet bills, you know, that's where my money goes.
Right.
Oh, and fixing up my house, my 140-year-old house, which every time you try and do something on a 140-year-old house, you get a really ugly surprise that costs you twice as much money.
Oh, I'm sure. And I'm guessing it's probably not on the National Register. Because that makes it even much more of a big problem.
Like, it's such a lot of piece of land, you know? It's like, in fact, we were working on it recently and took an outside wall apart, and the guys found that a footer, which is one of these big beams that supports that whole room, had completely rotted out. And I'm like, wow, I'm not happy we found that, but it's probably good we found it so we can fix it before the kitchen falls off the house.
Yeah, that would be terrible.
Yeah, that would not be. I've spent a lot of time in the kitchen, so it would not be good. But I think if there are things that you fall in love with and they cost a little bit of extra money, if you have the money for them, then by all means, you know, indulge yourself. You know, I occasionally get like something like a statue or something like that. But if you don't have money, it doesn't mean you can't practice witchcraft. And, you know, sometimes you read books that have instructions that are like, you need this esoteric herb that can only be found in, you know, New Zealand and shipped to you by carrier pigeon. I don't know.
That's silliness.
And I use the same herbs that I use in my kitchen, you know, many of which I grow in my garden and which people can grow on their windowsills if they don't have a garden. You don't have to do fancy pants stuff like that. And, you know, I do happen to have like every candle color on the planet, probably.
Right.
I mean, I've been doing it for a long time. So, but if you only have a white candle and you need to do, you know, magic for, say, love, just put a little pink ribbon around the bottom and look, pink candle. So there's, you know, there's lots of ways to do it. And I tell them everybody about them in the book.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. And, you know, you can buy candle holders that are different colors and just replace the candle, you know, so you can have every color you need, but just.
Well, and really, white counts for everything. You know, that's, I always say, you know, when in doubt, just use a white candle and, you know, add color some other way. Or don't do color, you know, just, you know, focus your attention on that spell with the stone or an herb or something else.
Yeah, you can envision the color you need too. Right. So, yeah, I feel the same way. I feel about rosemary the way I feel about white candles. Rosemary I use for almost everything.
Oh, rosemary and lavender. If you have rosemary and lavender, you can probably do almost any spell.
Yeah,
really,
for sure.
I mean, I have a whole bunch of other ones that I use too, but yeah, those two, rosemary is good for so many things. And it's really yummy.
It's delicious. It's like and my it smells favorite.
Good. I mean, I love great, the way it smells. So, I mean, there are some herbs I like mugwort. No, thank you. Ew.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, everybody has their preferences.
Yeah. Yeah, I do love some lavender and some rosemary. They're both fantastic. So you also had a reprinting of the Circle Covenant Grove. Is that?
That also came out from Cross Crow Books. That came out at the very end of last year, I think.
Okay.
And that was actually my first book from Llewellyn. Circle Covenant Grove, A Year of Magical Practice, was in fact based on the first year my group and I practiced together. I, you know, was a newbie high priestess. I had been with another coven and did, you know, like 5.5, 6 years. And did a year and a day of training and then sort of sat there going, well, now what? So when I ended up starting my own group, I, you know, I had a lot of information. I had a lot of things that my former high priestess had taught me. But what I realized after that first year was that what I really would have loved was sort of like a crib sheet, you know, like a book that just had, here's a ritual for all the new moons, full moons, and Sabbats. Here's like some basic information about, you know, how to do stuff. Here's some do's and don'ts. Here's like a list of like rules for ritual behavior so that when people come to visit, you can go, here you go. This is what we expect from you. I mean, we allowed guests and we had one woman who didn't know any better. And I made the assumption as a high priestess that, you know, people knew what they were doing, which wasn't always true. And in the middle of the ritual, she just got up and walked out of the circle for something. She'd forgotten something. I don't know what it was. And we're all just like, wait, what? No, you can't. And so, yeah, after that, I came up with my rules of ritual etiquette that I would hand to visitors or new people that I wasn't sure knew. And it would say things like, if you need to leave the circle in the middle of a ritual, please have someone cut you a hole. You know, or like, don't, you know, be first. I don't know, whatever.
Right. Yeah.
You know. But so what I really wished I had was this book that told me how to do that first year. And some suggestions for topics of discussion and all of this other kind of stuff, some basic correspondences. And I couldn't find that book, so I wrote it and sent it to Llewellyn. And they went, this is really groovy. We'll put this out. And I went, oh, crap. that's cool. And at the time, I had no intention of having a career as a nonfiction author. Mm-hmm. This was just, I was still working on fiction. And right. I never finished anything, so nothing was published. And I was 45 when I sold the book to Llewellyn. It came out when I was 47, because it's about a 2-year lag time. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I said to myself, well, you finished something. You no longer have the excuse that you've never finished anything. Sit mm-hmm. down and start working on the novels. And then I got another idea for a nonfiction book as I was working on the novels. And therein lies a career, apparently, because now I'm mm-hmm. up to like 18, plus a tarot deck and 2 oracle decks. And
Right.
And we just signed a contract for another tarot deck. So there's
that. Great.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. Elizabeth Alba, who's the illustrator that I've been working with. We have such a great time working together. But it's a really time-consuming process, especially for the illustrator.
Oh, I mean,
it doesn't
sure.
take me as long to write the book. She has to paint, you know, for the oracles, 40 paintings plus the back. And for, of course, the tarot, 78 paintings plus mm-hmm. the back. It's right. So that whole process takes a couple of years, plus the back and forth. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, we don't do a lot of those, but I love them. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, you want to tell us a little bit about the one that's coming out in May?
I could do that. Yeah. We're actually super, super excited about this one. I don't have any copies yet, but I do. I made up postcards to send to people.
Oh, so, beautiful.
Yeah. Well, first of all, her art is amazing. Second of all, mm-hmm. the art department did a stunning job just doing like the front cover and then the cover of the guidebook. Mm-hmm. So it's the Everyday Witch's Familiars Oracle. And yes, there is a cat on the front cover, but it isn't just cats. It's mm-hmm. actually 40 different animals. And we grouped it like our first oracle, the Everyday Witch Oracle. We had things grouped under earth, air, fire, and water. And with this, we did that with the animals, but then we had 4 that were spirit, which were mythical okay. animals. So we've got a unicorn, a dragon, a sphinx, and a phoenix, which are really cool. But basically, the oracle deck is all of these animals, some wild, some domesticated, some mythological, and how you can use a connection with them to do your magical work or to mm-hmm. do internal work or whatever it is that you want to do. So, it's less actual familiars and more just mm-hmm. being able to connect with animal spirit. And we had a great time. It took us forever to figure out which animals we were.
We were
back and forth going, well, all right, if we did this one, and this one, we can't do that one. Well, okay, so Aaron's got to be some birds and some, all right, butterfly, bee, does this fit in there or there? And yeah, it was complicated, but we had a grand time. And as always, Elizabeth's art is just stunning. I mean, yeah. absolutely gorgeous. And people are very excited about this deck. We've been posting sneak peeks for like a year. So we're really super excited to have it be coming out in May. I cannot wait until I get my first copies. You're going to be able to hear this screaming from your house.
That's funny.
When the dogs, the dogs' ears perk up and they're like, what is that high-pitched noise? You'll know that's me. I finally got the book.
That's funny. Yeah. I'm excited for it now, too. I didn't realize it was coming out, so I'm going to have to talk to Marcus, like I said.
Yeah. Well, it was sort of a surprise because it was originally due to come out in August.
Mm-hmm.
Further space from my other stuff. And then I guess somebody else who had an oracle deck due out in May wasn't ready, and our mm-hmm. stuff was ready. So Elizabeth went on to, I think, Amazon one day to look and see if they'd put the pre-orders up yet. And she went, oh, they got the date wrong. They say it's coming out in May. And so we, you know, I contacted, you know, the folks at Llewellyn and we went, you got the date wrong. And they went, oh, no, it is coming out in May. Didn't anybody tell you? And we're like, no, no, that might have been a good piece of information for us to have so we could, like, advance our promo schedule right. by, you know, half a year.
Absolutely.
But, yeah, we've already, because the process takes so long, we've been waiting for this thing for so long. We were thrilled. I mean, absolutely thrilled. We can't wait to have it out in the world. That'll be really, really cool. And then in July, I've got Llewellyn's little book of spellcraft coming out.
Oh, okay.
Last year I did Llewellyn's little book of witchcraft.
That's right. That's right.
And so this is another, I mean, they're just the greatest little hardcovers that, you know, they have a whole series of Llewellyn's little book of. And, you know, when I had been talking to my editor, Alicia, about what I was going to write next. And as usual, I'm like, I don't know. I wrote a lot of books. I'm running out of ideas. What should I write? And she said, well, you haven't written anything for that series yet. And I said, well, you know, what's left? What hasn't anybody written about? Mm-hmm. And she said, well, nobody's done the little book of witchcraft yet. And I went, dibs. Because, I mean, that's, you know, the everyday witch thing that I do, I'm very basic. Mm-hmm. I do not, you know, I don't specialize in like herbs or stones or, you know, something. And I don't do like high ceremonial. I just do witchcraft. So that was a perfect one for me. And she said, and nobody's done spellcraft. And I went, dibs. I said, can I do it both? She said, sure, you just have to pick one to do first. And I went, so so that spellcraft will be out in July. And I did do the Everyday Witch A to Z spell book back. That was the third book I ever wrote, I think. So that was a long time ago.
Right.
So I was due another spell book.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. That'll be fun to look at for sure. So I'm really excited that Circle Coven and Grove came back out because I actually am starting. Well, okay. So in June, I will be ordained.
Oh, wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you. So, and you know, right now I'm building my portfolio of rituals and spells and, you know, for my ministry.
Well, I have a good book for you.
I have it. Yeah, I'm actually really excited. And I hadn't read it yet because I just bought these recently. So I haven't gotten to that one. I get so many books.
Well, there's a problem to have. Yeah.
I know.
Oh, they keep sending you books. That's so sad. I know. But it is true. I mean, how do you keep up? I have a lot of books that I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to buy this because I'll read it at some point.
Eventually.
But I have a whole stack of to be read, both fiction and nonfiction. And the nonfiction, especially. It does pile up because it's not necessarily a fast, easy read. Yeah, I mean, my books are, but
yours are great.
Not all of them, and you know, you have to be in the right frame of mind for nonfiction,
right?
Yeah, so
I don't know. And usually these types of books I use as more just as like a reference,
right?
Like I'll pick it up to look at something specific.
And that's what I do. I very rarely read cover to cover, but you know, like this, you know, the you know, God and Goddesses book, you know, I looked up specific, you know, deities, but also like, okay, here's some of the myths from the Egyptian stuff. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Right.
So that's kind of cool. And I like to support other authors, so.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and that's part of the reason why I do this. It's like, I mean, I don't make any money. You know, this is, I actually lose
Wait,
money.
Wait, we were supposed to be making money at this? Oh, crap. I knew I'd gotten something wrong. It's, you know, it's so funny because people think authors are rich. And like Stephen King is rich. But you know, if your name is not Stephen King or Nora Roberts, you are almost certainly not getting rich off of writing.
Right.
You might be able to pay for cat food and the occasional box of Triscuits. You know, but I guarantee you that people are not getting rich. And the things that do the best, like the tarot decks, are pirated so often.
Oh my gosh. Probably so bad.
Half of the tarot decks that I would be selling, no money comes to me because they're not from the publisher. They're stolen, basically. And packaged cheaply, usually without the book. Oh, it makes me crazy. I have one right here, actually, somewhere. Yeah, I get messages from people literally on like a weekly basis saying, hey, you know, I got your deck and it didn't come with the book. Can you send me the book? I'm like, well, no. First of all, it comes legit as a set. I don't have the book by itself. If I wanted a book, I'd have to go buy the whole set. And, you know, I don't have spares, but also, you know, if you paid $8 for something that normally sells for $32, maybe, you know, you should figure there's. Although I will say people are now starting to tell me even store owners are being taken in by the fakes and they're selling them on. So you might have bought this piece of crap from a perfectly legitimate store that thought that they were selling you the real thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, basically at this point, what I tell everybody for the decks, get them directly from Llewellyn. That is the only way you can be absolutely sure you are getting the genuine article is, you know, don't even, you know, I mean, Amazon, you can find the real ones, but you have to make sure it says Llewellyn on the page, because you can go onto Amazon on any given day and find, you know, what it says is my deck.
Right.
And the pictures look the same. You know, you may find that it's missing cards. They're almost all from China. It almost certainly will not have the book. A lot of them have a QR code on the back that doesn't work. And then people are like, well, the QR code didn't work. Can you fix it? And I'm like, no, because it's not from me. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I've been taken in a couple times. But now, so I put the cards like singular in with whatever I'm sending out to my patrons or whatever.
Right.
You know, like.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I tell people is send them back to wherever you got them and then report the seller, because otherwise they're going to keep doing it. But yeah, they're on Etsy. They're on eBay. They're everywhere.
Yeah.
And especially Wish. And Temu, never shop on either of those places ever. I know everything is cheap. There's a reason everything is cheap. It's either a knockoff or, you know, crap. But a lot of it is stolen from the artists, from the authors. And anytime that you support a place like that, you're supporting people who are ripping off publishers and authors and artists. And that's not cool.
Nope.
You know, I don't care how much money it saves you. Don't do it. Be pleased.
Such a shame that, that happens.
Why can't people be nice?
Right.
Why?
Yeah. I think my daughter is on one of those online art things. I know I sound like an idiot, but she's had her art stolen.
Oh, it's so difficult. Yeah, Elizabeth's had her art stolen, and not just from the tarot, but other things. And, you know, they have to put watermarks and do things. It doesn't matter. They still steal them. And my books show up as free downloads of my books, which I guarantee you, I have not put up, Llewellyn has not put up a free download. And again, almost all of those, you're going to get some sort of a virus. There is no such thing as a free book. I mean, some people put them up because they believe in freedom of knowledge and information. It's like, well, that's great, except if I don't get paid to write a book, I can't afford to spend the time writing the book. It is not, you know, free to do things. So, you know, like if a farmer grows vegetables, you think you should just be able to have those for free? Books are my vegetables. Right. I grow them. It takes me usually about 6 months to create a book. And that's like just the main bulk of it. And that's not the promo time and the, you know, all the rest of it.
Right.
That's, you know, and this is what I do for a living. If people don't buy my books, then I'm going to have to, you know, I don't know, go back to prostitution or whatever.
That's
everybody else's reaction too. So I don't think that's a really good career choice. Yeah. Hey, those quarters add up, you know? Well, you know, I could take up a career as a stand-up comedian. Except
it sounds like it.
I would have to do it sitting down. I'm too tired to be a stand-up comedian. I'd have to be a sit-down comedian.
That's so funny.
But yeah, Circle, Covenant, Grove, I think, is a really useful book. And when it first came out, I had a lot of people who wrote and said, you know, I'm a solitary. I don't work with a coven, but I still use the rituals. I just change them and adapt them so that they work for a solitary. You know, and I think that's great. I didn't anticipate that. But yeah, you know, everything is adaptable. If you find something that you like, make it your own. You know, Circle, Coven, and Grove was written earlier on in my practice when I was more sort of traditional Wiccan. These days, I'm a little bit more eclectic. So there are things that are not exactly the way I practice anymore. If I were going to use some of those rituals, I might change up a few things myself. But you can do that. You know, it's, you know, there is no one right way. That's every book of mine you read, it's going to say that in there somewhere.
Right.
Because, you know, unless you are actively doing something to hurt yourself or somebody else, there's no wrong way to do it.
Right.
Do what feels right to you. Do what suits your situation, your budget, your style, the amount of time you have. I mean, a lot of the things that I write are written to be done relatively quickly, except the whole complete ritual kind of stuff, because I know most of us, if we can grab 5 or 10 minutes in the day to do something that supports our spiritual life, we're doing really well.
Yeah, usually the time I have is to light my candles and say thank you. You know, that's it.
Well, and what I actually do every day is I say, you know, I greet the gods in the morning. I'm literally still in bed in my PJs. I haven't, you know, I haven't even opened my eyes yet, except to see what the cats are doing by making that noise. But, you know, I just greet the gods and greet the day. And I ask for, you know, help with things and, you know, ask them to send healing to whoever needs it. And, you know, ask for things to go better in the world and for them to watch over me. And then I get up and get on with my day. And then at night, when I get back into bed, I say thank you. You know, for whatever has come through the day, whoever has been helpful, occasionally for things that were not helpful, but, you know, then I give thanks for the strength to survive them.
Right.
and, you know, that's the core of my daily practice. You know, I also do, you know, like I had a couple of the women from the coven were over yesterday for spring equinox a couple days early, because that was when we could schedule it.
That's how it works.
We did a little ritual and a little mini feast, nothing very complicated because we were all really tired. And I do, you know, I have my altar set up and I have ongoing things. But yeah, it's usually go over there, light a candle, you know, repeat the spell that I put up there a week ago, stand there for a couple of minutes, blow out the candle, go on with my life.
That's
for me, you know, I mean, one of the reasons I call myself an everyday witch and why that's on so many of the things that I do is because I've been practicing for long enough that it's less about ritual and even things like full moons, although I love full moon. And it's more about how I walk my talk every day. It's about, you know, how I channel my beliefs as a pagan, as a witch, into how I act and what I do, you know, and that may be something as simple as composting and, you know, recycling because I'm trying to be kind to the earth, you know, and feeding the birds when the bears don't prevent it because I believe there's a connection to nature. Apparently I'm feeding the bears now. Huzzah!
I'm sure they appreciate
you. You know, they're just a bigger, furrier part of nature than I was anticipating.
Sharper.
So, yeah, I mean, for me, a lot of the times, I throw in herbs and do kitchen magic and all the rest of it, but it's less a matter of a practice than it is a way of life, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. Can you hear my dog snoring?
No, I can't. I'm missing it. Is your dog snoring?
Yeah.
Well, better snoring than barking.
That's
my cat abandoned me completely. Yeah. People are like, oh my God, you have 5 cats? And I'm like, yeah, but you hardly see them all in the same room at the same time. Yeah. Unless it's mealtime for either them or me. And even, you know, like dinner time, if whatever I'm having doesn't interest them, I'm like, what? Nobody? You know, they're all asleep on the bed. Yeah. I have a heated water bed. In the winter, it's way more popular than I am.
That's so
way
funny.
Way more popular than I am.
I usually can't go anywhere without this one. She's always with me.
Yeah. Well, and I have one, you know, Koshka, you saw him at the beginning, and he's usually wherever I am. Apparently, he was not interested in being recorded. Flash photography.
That's right.
I don't know. So yes, he went. But yeah, he's the one who usually, if I'm writing, he's right next to me. If I'm, you know, doing something else, you know, he's supervising me. I don't know.
That's great. That's great. That's so funny. Well, I just want to say thank you again so much for coming on and visiting with me. You're just such a pleasure to interview. You're so much fun.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
And you're a very wonderful interviewer.
Oh, I mean, thank you.
I get the whole spectrum. So, yes.
So do I.
Many of them are very nice and wonderful. Mm-hmm. Some of them are less knowledgeable about witchcraft than others. You know, I sometimes get invited onto paranormal programs where they do ghost hunters and other things, and they don't necessarily know a lot about witchcraft. So I get to answer the same basic questions a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But no, I love, you know, chatting on podcasts, you know, and getting to hopefully, you know, talk about my books and share interesting information and usually go off onto random segues because
that's the fun of this conversations.
We can talk about anything we want. They're not the boss of us.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely.
Well, thank you for having me back and enjoy the books.
I will.
Let me know if you have any questions.
I will.
You know where to find me.
I do. All right, great. If you don't mind, when I hit the end button, just hang it out for a second to make sure everything uploads. But
okay.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate you very, very much.